All right, everyone, welcome to the July 27th edition of the In The Now Show. This is your host, Slip Mode, in the house, along with...
DR, here as always.
Awesome. DR is drugged up on a bunch of cough drugs, right? Or cold drugs, right?
Oh, yeah. There's nothing better than over-counter pharmaceuticals. I've got pseudoephedrine and... I'm so out of it, I can't even remember half the things that are in my system right now.
Sweet. All right, so that's the kind of excitement that we'll have here at the show while we're reading all of the information and spreading it out to all you listeners out there.
Because we are committed to you.
Yeah. Well, shoot, BR's committed. He's sick and he's even here.
That's right.
All right. Well, I've kind of gotten into a small... I've kind of gotten a format... of the show going here. Seems like I do general information in the beginning, and then I'll get into specific subjects that have accumulated a lot of information that, or it's going to take a lot of time to send that information out. And then at the end, we have our SCO section.
SCO.
Yeah, which is totally filled with information that's been acquired, you know, every 2 weeks, and there's so much of it. I've decided to dedicate a whole section to it at the end. So if you get, you know, sick of it, you know, you can at least you get all the information you want, and then at the end you could just tune out if it's really, really that bad for you.
Or if you keep on listening to it, and then it might interest you later on down the road because it'll have a whole lot of meaning for you.
Well, yeah.
We'll just, you know, pummel you with information about SCO.
Awesome. Okay, here is... a small story about Microsoft having to pay out $1.1 billion because they overcharge customers in California. A California judge gave preliminary approval to a landmark settlement under which Microsoft will pay $1.1 billion to settle a class action suit that claimed it overcharged consumers for Windows. Consumers and corporations in the state will be notified that they may qualify for vouchers ranging from the value of $5 to $29. Townsend and Townsend and Crew, which is the law firm that won the suit, interesting name, the law firm that filed the suit described its ruling as the largest recovery of monopoly overcharge ever achieved in the United States and the largest recovery ever achieved under the antitrust laws of California. The lawsuit filed in February of 1999 claimed that Microsoft violated California antitrust laws by overcharging by as much as $40 per copy of Windows 95 and 98 operating systems. People seeking refunds will be able to go to MicrosoftCalSettlement.com or call 1-800-203-9995 to request a claim form. So,
which that's kind of funny. I always thought Microsoft was overcharging about $120 per package.
Well, yeah, but
wait, that's the full sticker price, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the sticker price. So if you're in California, might as well get
take advantage of this new promotional offer that Microsoft is giving for you.
Yeah, get some Taco Bell food on Microsoft. All right. Moving right along, we're going to get more into, I don't know if this information is interesting to everybody, but it's more on the battle of, who's buying Microsoft products, who's buying Linux products, and stuff like that. So basically, this is some more information about Microsoft trying to keep the market that they already have and not let it get out to be bought up by, well, chosen other people, choosing other rivals other than Microsoft, namely Linux. So a couple of these stories will kind of go into that. Microsoft secures $140K desktop Homeland Security deal. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has signed a deal for Microsoft. Both software, or Microsoft software, worth something in the region of $100 million, covering servers and over 140,000 desktops. So you'll see that they secured that deal, which is one that they've already had in the past. But later on, we'll discuss some of the things that, admittedly, Microsoft will do to not lose to Linux.
Which is also really strange, because the Bush administration has done a really nice thing for, like, smaller companies, is they give them, like, smaller companies more preference on contracts, if they are able to handle those or not. And then to have the Homeland Security using Microsoft's software, which is inevitably much less secure than anything else.
Oh, yeah, and we'll talk about a nice exploit later on for Microsoft.
That whole thing is just really kind of asinine on several different levels there.
Well, I think they might be just choosing it because they've had it before, and it's such an investment to change all their systems now and go back. I mean, it's such a huge, you know, organization. Maybe they'll do it slowly, maybe not. I don't know if there's anything to do ridiculously with this SCO suit. I don't know if Microsoft's got a buddy over at the government. I don't know.
I think that's what it is, because also the U.S. government is the largest consumer of vacuum tubes in the world. So I'm not sure that, you know, archaic investments is, might just be the way we do things.
All right.
But they use the vacuum tubes because they are not affected by radiation.
Awesome.
Do you know that?
I'm actually kind of just floating along and getting ready for the next story here.
All right, not a problem there. Well, there's a little nugget there for you.
Oh, okay.
So you can, you know, if you have vacuum tube stuff, it'll survive the fallout radiation from a nuclear holocaust.
There you go. Sweet. My room will not survive a nuclear holocaust, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
and I don't have any vacuum.
Silicon germanium crap, it just goes...
Awesome.
Can't handle it.
All your silicon are belong to the nuclear fallout.
That's right.
Okay, this is a win for Linux, which basically a German city in Munich was balking on a $36.6 million proposal from Microsoft to upgrade 14,000 desktop PCs to the latest versions of Windows and Office. Instead, Munich, Germany's third largest city and a technological hub for Central Europe, was leaning towards a switch to Linux, this is basically what the article, because I'm reading it straight from there, is basically saying that Linux is becoming more competitive. The Linux victory in Munich would be a stunning blow. So Ballmer visited Mayor Christian Ude to assure him Microsoft would do what it takes to keep the city's business. Documents obtained by USA Today show Microsoft subsequently lowering its price to $31.9 million, then to $23.7 million, which is an overall 35% price cut. The discounts were not. On May 28th, the city council approved a more expensive proposal, $35.7 million, actually spent on German Linux distributor SUSE and IBM, a big Linux backer. It's kind of weird. They spent more money than they got Linux. But here is some of the things that also Microsoft did to try to not lose this contract or sale. Agreed to let Munich go as long as 6 years instead of the normal 3 to 4 without another expensive upgrade. As a concession that runs against its bread-and-butter software upgrade strategy. Offering to let the city buy only Microsoft Word for its PCs and strip off other applications such as unbundling cuts against Microsoft's practice of selling PCs loaded with software. And also offering millions of dollars worth of training and support services for free.
I smell a rat because that sounds like they're almost
doing whatever they could to get it.
Well, and also it said that, you know, they were going to unbundle a lot of other things, which is kind of one of the reasons why they were having a class action suit here, is because they said that they couldn't unbundle all that. But here they go outside the country and then they can.
Well, that's just for, like, office suites. I mean, you can unbundle those, but the original case you're talking about was for, like, Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
about. Yeah, being bundled. They're not unbundling that. But I also read something along with that. Okay, that's a big win for Linux, but I also read something along with that to be fair and informative, that those machines, supposedly, according to this other article, will be running VMware and using Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office. Kind of weird. So they spent more money, and they're still running Windows. I don't know. I don't know if that's a benefit or if that's...
Well, it must be something other than, you know, that. Because they spent more money, so they probably must have more problems with Microsoft running that exclusively.
Well, one thing that they did say is that something along those lines is that they were unsure of what the fees for Microsoft in the future will be for upgrading. But according to that contract, or thing that Microsoft was willing to do, was to basically, if there was any upgrades within 6 years, 5-6 years, they would allow you to have those upgrades free of charge. And then, I don't know. I mean, it could be a thing where they're trying to move closer towards, you know, Linux, and then the only thing that they need is that they exchange Microsoft Docs all the time, Microsoft Excel, stuff like that. I don't think you'd actually need VMware to do that, to run Microsoft Word and, well, bug-free maybe. I don't know. Not sure. I mean, I don't even know why, if competitively Linux is going to be cheaper, which it has been shown in the past, why SUSE would sell it for $37.5, I think it was, I read, million dollars, and Microsoft was willing to put it the same price. You know, I don't know if that's just kind of weird there. That,
well, actually, they're willing to go even cheaper.
Well, yeah, that Microsoft is willing to go cheaper. So I don't know. It's just all around weird article. It's not a success in my mind. It's not a doesn't really show anything beneficial to anybody, I don't think.
Well, it actually shows that this place, the Munich, is willing to spend more money for that software because it's more likely more reliable. It doesn't need the upgrades. Well, the expensive upgrades anyway. Even after 6 years.
Well, it could also be that they're backing a German company.
Oh, there you go.
And which would be a smart thing to do, is to help your own country. So, I don't know. But interesting nonetheless. Some people don't know that the article came out, and that those machines, by what I've read also, that those machines will be running Windows as well. So people don't realize it's not really a win. Okay, here is an interesting article about something I've read. I've known about this operating system before. It's called Tron, and it's been around since 1984. And basically, the article shows that the writer of Tron could be far beyond wealthier, far beyond what Bill Gates is. But he just chose to live a decent life, and decent as far as money-wise. And, well, here, let me just read all the details here. He could have been as rich as Bill Gates, but Ken Sakamura says he's fine earning enough to lead an ordinary life. In the world of computers, the obscure Japanese engineer stands in the top rank along with Gates, operating system that is more widely used and even more than Microsoft Corp Windows. Sakamura's system, Tron, is used to run items ranging from digital cameras to car engines, just as Windows operates personal computers. What sets the two systems apart, and the fortunes of Sakamura and Gates, is that while Windows must be bought from Microsoft, Tron is attributed free of charge. Had Sakamura decided to charge even 1 cent to each user of Tron, he would easily be a billion-dollar man by now, possibly even rivaling Gates. Reputed to be the world's richest man by a fortune estimated of $43 billion. I'm the engineer type, not a businessman, said Sakamura, 51, a professor at University of Tokyo who developed the software nearly 20 years ago. I think Mr. Gates is more of a businessman, he laughs. As long as I'm leading an ordinary life, I have no problems. Just a note, anybody that drives a Toyota car, you're most likely using the Tron operating system in there that controls the engine. So that's a pretty neat story, and it's been open source. It's been out for a long time, and lots of people are using it, and just goes to show that...
Not everybody is money hungry.
Yeah. And that you can offer choice, and you can offer something out there that's more in the form of beneficial, and certainly has benefited others by using that program. It's benefited him for making the program, and it's what it's all about. It's all about making things better. Okay. Well, this, I'm going to go and move towards two new bugs or exploits out there now that have definitely caused some more bad luck for Microsoft. Basically, and I'll just read it right here, LSD, which is a group called the Last Stage of Delirium, basically they released a new exploit, and the description of this is a buffer overflow vulnerability that exists in the integral part of the Windows operating system. The RPC interface implementing Distributed Component Object Module Services, DCOM, and the result of implementation error in a function responsible for the initiation of the DCOM objects, remote attackers can obtain unauthorized access to vulnerable systems. So there is some code that they did release, and I tried it here in a few machines and I didn't have any luck. I don't know if it's actually... some machines it's been known to work, some machines it hasn't been. So you can tweak it a little bit. Plus, this is like the public version. Basically allows access to machines, Windows NT 4.0, Windows 2000, Windows XP, and Windows 2000 server, 2003 server. And it doesn't take much to run it, and usually gives you access on most machines. I've seen it have more luck with XP machines than 2000 machines, but overall pretty interesting. And then from there, you could do anything you wanted. I had a friend of mine, he actually did it to his parents' machine, and it worked, and he got in, and he patched it. He started terminal services, and then used a terminal service to basically get a desktop, and then he patched it and logged back out. So that's another big blow to Microsoft systems out there. There is abundancy of these types of things showing up. So, there is supposedly a patch out for it. Go ahead and grab that and do what you can to protect yourself against it. It's also helpful to have a firewall in front of those systems. If they can't connect to it, then they can't use the exploit. So that would be... beneficial for you to do that. I've even seen, just because I'm rambling on here, I've even seen a program that's out that's unreleased. It's a private version, and it actually has a better version of the code. It's kind of neat. What it does is it's a front end, and you load these modules, which is basically other exploits are the modules. And it will do scanning for you. You can execute it. You can once you execute certain exploits, you can then create users on the boxes. And it's a whole tool. It's unreleased, but nonetheless, things like that are out there. And you really need to be doing what you everything possible to make sure that your systems are secure. Okay. This was kind of interesting. They came out with this exploit here, or not an exploit, but this warning talking about a new security problem with Cisco IOS, which is the operating system that runs on Cisco routers. And as soon as they came out with the idea that they knew that this type of exploit could exist, basically a few minutes later, it did exist, and somebody did produce one. Basically, the warning for this one is, by sending a specifically crafted IPv4 packet to the interface, actually packets, not just packet, but a few of them, to an interface on a vulnerable device, which is basically a Cisco router or one that runs iOS, an intruder can cause the device to stop processing packets destined to that interface. Basically, that's a DOS, denial of service. And that would not be healthy to have that happen to your network. They do have a patch out for it, so go to Cisco's site and make sure you patch your iOS. An exploit was available shortly after that story. There was another CERT advisory that came out. If you'd like to read the CERT advisory, it's CERT advisory 2003 15. But there was another one that did, there was an exploit that did come out and could be used against your Cisco router or PIX firewall or other devices that run your iOS. So that's something to definitely take care of. Well, on to our prized section here. This is going to be a lot of information. I think we've tried to do our best to be the provider of up-to-date information on the SCO suit. Mostly general information. I mean, it's not, we don't totally go into it and research it as far as, you know, people that are doing the case should, you know, are doing it. But we're going to provide all the information that you need to know about the case that's going on. I think people have listened to the previous shows, but I'm going to just reiterate it here, what the SCO suit is all about in a nutshell, which is basically SCO has said that IBM has used their code in the Linux operating system. And since it's their code, it's copyrighted code, and they're seeking damages of $3 billion now, actually. Okay, so here's a bit of information here. Basically, some of the code that's been talked about that they've been getting into as far as things that SCO has said has been proven to be, or supposedly proven to be, put into Linux is code from RCU, which is a read, copy, update, JFS, which is the journaling file system, and SMP, which is shared memory and multiprocessing machines. Those things there, well, there's two things I'm going to say about that. Those things there, one thing is the fact that that's pretty much, if you're not running JFS and you're not running multiprocessors, then you're not using that code. That's one thing. Most people aren't running multiprocessors in the home environment, and most people are not using JFS. So that right there, if that proves to be true, that that is actually code from SCO put into Linux, then you're obviously not violating anything by those means. I will talk about later how the fact that SCO has actually targeted Linux users now, not just IBM. They've actually targeted Linux users. Okay. So basically, well, there's that. And then also here, it's a bit of information about finding out who was the main contributor of that code into the Linux kernel development. And I'll just read this right out. SCO may now have filed for our Unix copyrights and made various allegations about copying code, but the actual complaint against IBM still seems to be focused around allegations Unix-based enterprises. Unix-based enterprise technologies such as RCU, JFS, and SMP were improperly added to Linux. Yet reviewing the Linux kernel archives reveals some interesting and surprising background on just who helped put those technologies into Linux. Basically, there was a Caldera employee, which was the key Linux kernel contributor, which also looks like that he did a lot of work in the early stages of JFS. The same employee name also crops up when you look at RCU. When IBM posts RCU improvements, did he complain? No, he requested further improvements and helped helpfully provided a link to inspire the IBMer. Lastly, definitely worth reading, which is, this is part of the article and there was a URL link, but it was basically saying that Alan Cox on the Linux SMP, because he was the one that brought that to Linux, he says he got the idea from a book, which presumably can't be somebody's trade secret, invented his own implementation and did this using hardware provided by Caldera, which SCO themselves do acknowledge providing hardware to the Linux SMP team. So right there, it's getting to more details as far as, okay, well, if it's that code, who was working on that code, and where did it come from? So it definitely was looking like it came from one individual. So we are going to do component-wise. That was our first component, one saying that the information from the said problematic code was contributed by one main person in all three senses, except for the SMP portion. Well, that was Alan Cox, but the other person also did contribute to that. And then also the fact that I mentioned, and I'll talk about it more later, that they have targeted, SCO has targeted Linux users for using their code and basically trying to scare them into a licensing scheme, which we'll talk about that a little bit later. Lots of stuff going on, so it's I'm going to try to do my best to make it clear and informative. Okay. This is basically an article here saying something to the effect of what I just said, which is now they are claiming for the first time that Linux users are violating its Unix copyrights, particularly as SCO is now registering and receiving U.S. copyright for its Unix System 5 source code. And they had to get the copyrights for it to even do the case. So that's actually a portion of their legal case, is that they will need to actually have this stuff all completely copyrighted and before they can proceed. All right. I think VR is like he's on his whole like an acid trip.
I'm doing some astral planing here.
Astral planing.
That's right.
Okay. All right. This is some information about what Bill Gates has to say on the whole SCO and IBM debacle, which really pisses me off, because it's just you'll see the attitude, you'll see the taint that's thrown on this. Microsoft Chairman and Chief Software Architect Bill Gates said the intellectual property battle between SCO and IBM is hurting the business of Linux. Gates said that the controversy has exposed fundamental weakness of Linux, that the general public license makes it difficult for companies to engage in cross-licensing deals that have become standard in the software industry. Gates predicted that the intellectual property and GPL issues will eventually create enough inertia to hurt Linux's acceptance in commercial settings. One thing that the GPL is that you can't just license IBM Linux or Red Hat Linux, Gates said. The way the GPL works is if you license any Linux, you have to license all Linux. Here you have a problem, or have a product without R&D controls, which is research and development, and it's not a part of a cross-license. Well, who needs cross-licensing when all the source is open? And research and development, don't you think there's research and development that's gone into this? How do you think it was created?
Yeah, it's just the cross-licensing is the thing that the Microsoft has created over the how they do their licensing.
Yeah.
And everybody's become accepted to doing that because that's what they're used to.
Yeah.
But all those problems, they don't exist when you use a Linux system.
Yeah, the problem may exist if you're trying to make a lot of money and you're trying to, keep things of your own and you know, it's just a bunch of crap. Okay, so that's what he had to say. Well, hold on one sec. Microsoft has not determined whether SCO's claims that IBM misappropriated Unix System 5 code and donated it to the open source community are valid. However, Gates has said intellectual property from SCO and other companies, including Microsoft, has found its way into the code. Well, I don't understand. I mean, do we need code for, like, from Microsoft Windows Media Player to run XMMS or what? Do we need their code for?
Well, that's the problem with how the Digital Copyright Act is thing is it's not actually the words or whatnot that is copyrighted. It's actually the function. Like if you copyright A plus B equals C in code and have that copyrighted, any time that there's like it can be. It's the function of it. It can be B plus C equals, like Z. And, oh, you've just infringed on copyright.
So everyone that's made a GUI with an X in the corner to close the window is now violating whoever first invented that?
It can be if that's copyrighted.
See, that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a really bad act.
And in saying the way that he says it here, he makes it sound like, you know, it was done for Linux's benefit. Frankly, you know, there's so many things that Linux has done that's not anywhere else. And also, I did read once that they're SCO, the reason why Microsoft is, I think it's licensing SCO products, it's because they bought some of the rights or the licensing to be able to use SCO. They're basically developing code to emulate running UnixWare on their, not UnixWare the product, but actually Unix apps on their operating system. So if there's any benefit of running like a, you know, Unix app or Linux app on, you know, Microsoft, you can just pull it over and be able to use it. So now they're trying to use the benefits of Linux. It's just a bunch of crap. I mean, if he wanted to be on the level, he would have said a lot of things, you know, but you'll never see Bill talking about how, you know, open source does have benefits. You'll never hear him say that because it wouldn't make sense for him to say that, you know, according to what we've seen in the past. I mean, why would he say that when he's, you know, trying to sell a product?
Yeah.
But anyways, it's just the fact that it's just showing the fact that you're not going to see from the people that have a stake in this case to say anything intelligent. You know, all they're going to do is say something that's going to be belligerent and not going to be balanced at all. I think it's who can put out the most crap. I mean, SCO has been putting out a lot of crap. Microsoft is on standby. You know, just maybe SCO's their puppet, maybe not, but basically they're allowing everything to happen. If they're going to make a comment or anything, it's definitely not going to be in Linux's favor. Okay. This is some fighting back from an open source group. Open Source Victoria today filed a complaint with the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission asking it to investigate SCO's activities in the light of unsubstantiated claims and extortive legal threats of money against possibly hundreds of thousands of Australians. So basically, you know, they're saying, look, you know, you're being belligerent, you haven't even proven anything yet, and you're being harassing, and you're making threats, and we seek damages. One of the members, Zamaris, I think, said that, with the latest move, SCO had crossed the line. They're basically saying you owe some money, but if someone asks you why you owe the money, they reply, well, we can't tell you why, but you have to pay us anyways. Which is basically they haven't proved anything about the code, and they're now putting things in order to try to extort money from Linux users. And I'm going to get to that later. So there's a lot of things going on.
Wow, that's a brilliant way to try to make money. Like, you know what? You owe me money. Well, why do I owe you money? Because I told you, you owe me money.
Well, the thing is that, let me get to these comments, and then I'll reflect. Pam said, which is another member of the open source group, all the Linux operating system has been released as open source software. We want to remind the IT industry that by definition, there are absolutely no license fees payable on free and open source software. Anyone who claims that licensing fees are required for Linux is deliberately misleading and confusing the public. And Zamaris said that even if SCO could show that the Unix System 5 code that was present in the Linux kernel and was not intentionally contributed by SCO's own staff, SCO could not absolve itself for any of the past few months. It had been publishing all such code publicly under the GNU public license. This releases all supposedly disputed code from any additional encumbrances from SCO, meaning that all users can use Linux with impunity. Through their insistence and withholding public disclosure of any worthwhile evidence in the case, the SCO group are leaving an impression that they have such sole evidence, as Zamaris said. One feels that this whole fiasco is the IT industry's equivalent of a Nigerian scam or internet extortion ploy. So he was saying right there that when SCO was doing SCO Linux and releasing that under the GPL, GNU software, basically it did it on its own. You know, it made it open source. So it actually added it to the GPL license. because that code was there, it was open source, and it probably had the code, because it was all Linux, it probably had the code that was in question. So if they release that under the GPL, aren't they effectively making it free and open source code? So how can they charge for it? Okay, so now we're moving on to some more information. And in the end, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to try my best to summarize it all. Here is a little bit of information about how Talbert's responded to the question, how has the SCO IBM lawsuit affected Linux? And basically, Talbert said the biggest effect by far has been a lot of time wasted on discussion. Obviously, there have been a lot of people worried, but it hasn't actually affected Linux in any real sense. Part of the reason is that it hasn't affected Linux in any real sense is that the way we've done development. Because it's been so open, there have always been a very real electronic trail of exactly how everything came to the kernel, from which source, and stuff like that. So we actually have a very good notion of where the code came from and what the intellectual property rights are. It seems that, to me, that SCO really minds is not so much the code itself, it is the contract lawsuit with IBM. I don't know what IBM contracts are. It's kind of ironic because, especially when it comes to stuff that IBM has given Linux, we have been very, very careful about how we accept them. One thing SCO has mentioned has been the read, copy, update code that IBM gave us, and that wasn't accepted for the longest time in the kernel exactly because we knew that the patents were owned by IBM. But we could not take it until you, which means IBM, said very explicitly that you also license the patents. Basically, some more information there as far as the real end in Linux, as far as how it's affected things, has really not affected it that much yet. And, okay, so this is the next bit of information that SCO readies a new licensing program. Basically, what they're doing now is that people can go and buy this buy a license for their machine, and I don't know what the cost is. They don't have any listing of what the cost is, but that's supposed to obliterate you from any legalities or any issues like that. But the funny thing is that, we've said it before and we'll say it again, is that the case has not even gotten to a point of being proven in either direction. So it's pretty much pointless to go out and spend money on something that right now, I mean, as we sit at this point in time, nobody has violated anything. And once the court finally proves what happens in the end, then, you know, something like that or many other things will have to be thought of. But right now, as we sit, there is nothing that you have to do as far as this goes. So that is all of the SCO information for the last 2 weeks that I've been able to pick up. Basically, they're now attacking Linux consumers. They're now attacking anyone that develops Linux. Basically, anything that touches Linux, they're threatening, and they want you to get to a point of purchasing their license. Also, they're looking to get a settlement from IBM, and who knows what else. But
I think that's a kind of a neat idea of going and trying to, well, this stuff's free over here, and somebody else owns this, and, well, you know, I'm just going to try to sell everybody the same stuff, and then you just pay me to license it.
Yeah, it's
really similar to, like, you know what, I've got the Brooklyn Bridge over here for sale, and, yeah, I actually kind of own it. So you want to buy it or, you know, pay for a lease on it?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's just like, you know, like, well, if Linux is going to get popular and SCO Unix is not going anywhere, why don't we just say we own it and then everyone can just license us, which is pretty much what you said. But, yeah, it's just, it's pretty ridiculous. When it comes to one of the interviews I read in the past with Bill Gates, he had said, hey, has anyone ever heard of OS2? Remember OS2 Warp? And he was talking about the fact that how OS2 Warp was so good and so if it was so good, why did it go, and now it's bygone, and Microsoft is still here. Well, OS2 Warp actually was a better product than Windows. Nowadays, you know, it's not, because it just hasn't been developed or worked on. OS2 or IBM actually had some issues on their own in bringing that product to light. Probably one of the main reasons, or one of the good reasons, why the product didn't succeed. But Bill Gates, you know, you'll never see him say something to the effect that, oh, I'm really worried about, you know, this product or anything like that. But you could totally see by what Ballmer was willing to do in that deal that he would drop the price by 35%, offer free training, and allow that person to do upgrades for up to 6 years without incurring any upgrade costs. So
yeah, that's almost a desperate move.
It's very desperate move. You can see that they're really shaking a lot of hands over with the United States as far as trying to keep their product, you know, there. So, I don't know. I've spent a lot of time talking about it because it's something that I've read a lot about, and you know, I kind of enjoy the idea of open source and enjoy the use of the software. So anything that comes along crap like this, you know, it's definitely going to spark my attention to get involved and think about it. Well, we've done the SCO section, and now we've actually moved on to a portion of the show where I think we're just going to do some creative thinking.
Ooh, creative thought.
Creative thought.
I don't know. Have you noticed that everybody seems to not think as much, and courteousness has gone by the wayside? Our hungers for material goods have grown so great that we don't think too much and we don't read too much. And we're almost like the Tyrannosaurus Rex. We have very small frontal lobes and a giant mouth of consumption. We all run around with our little arms flailing, trying to get from one thing to another, eating and consuming what we can on the way.
You know, I think that's been happening for years, though. It's just, I think as we get older, we just realize it's actually happening more and more.
Oh, yeah. Well, and of course, it's speeding up as well.
But, I mean, there's still a lot of people that are out there that read and do, you know, things of a, you know, opposite nature of what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, of course there is. Otherwise, or I'm just in a time in my life where I'm surrounded by a lot of that, and so therefore it just seems much more blatant, because there's been times where I've had a much better idea and thought and view of the world. I've just grown a little jaded and disappointed lately.
Well, I mean, you always got to keep your guard up as far as, you know, being a creative thinker. And I mean, you're not going to be able, not every one of your ideas, you know, not just speaking to you, just in general, like even for myself, not every idea is going to get passed, accepted. You know, some of those things, maybe if you're right and it doesn't happen, you know, just kind of keep that to yourself and make that feel, you know, give you some self-worth that you have done something. You know, with the, with anything in life, you know, if it's computers, if it's anything else, you know, try to be proactive as far as a proactive thinker, try to be on the balance with things, try to, you know, consider other people's ideas and work as a team and a group. And try to generally improve the state of life for yourself and people around you and others in general. I guess we can get on a deep psychological or philosophical conversation on, you know, my feeling is that open source does that in a way. Of course, there's lots of things you can attach it to, but that may not be pretty or could lead to something, but in my mind, I think, and from my use and my stance, when I use open source software or when I use anything created by a person that is sharing freely for others to enjoy, I feel like I'm a part of a great community, and I feel also the person himself also is being a free thinker and inventor, and you've seen constantly in the past things like that have benefited society immensely. You know, you can't have an idea and just shrug it all to your, well, you could, but if you had an idea and shrug it all to yourself and sold it out, you know, a lot of times that idea is not better when it's kept to yourself. It's not, something that's allowed to be, you know, worked on and maintained by other people, to update it, which generally might find the faults in what you created and make it even yet better. But also when you sell it to people, you're also limiting it to a certain group of people. And, you know, things like lawn chairs and televisions and stuff like that, I mean, when you get it, you get it, you know, and somebody improves it, fine. But, you know, software is a little different because a TV is a TV, you know, and a lawn chair is a lawn chair. And these items here don't really intermingle, you know, a lot. But if you notice how software can be spread all over the place and intermingle with so many things. Its potential for use far exceeds what a normal device can do on its own, or just something that just sits there, you know, on its own. It's definitely going to benefit people if there is something that is a system, you know, that's used, that people can use it all across the board and it's not limited.
Well, yeah, like Tron, that, you know, there's at least 100 billion users of it. There's systems that use it. And it's got to be informative and useful, and that it makes the world a little bit better place.
Yeah, definitely.
And we don't have to pay an arm and a leg for it, which is even better.
Yeah. You know, I've actually paid for Linux. I used to buy every distribution that I got. Now I just, now I usually just download for free, actually, which is not bad, you know. But, you know, talking about it and supporting it, I guess I've helped in the sense of, for troubleshooting, I've helped others, you know, troubleshoot problems. I've, you know, found bugs and gone through and tried to work out what the solution is. And so, I mean, I've contributed in that. So I've contributed to trying to make a system work better, which somebody else is going to use. And hopefully those problems won't be there for that user. But not only me, but thousands and tens of thousands of people have done that. It's just a great movement, I think. And I'm really excited that it's there.
Well, yeah, it's like having a 10,000-person research and development team.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Which Bill doesn't understand that, you know, this isn't OS2 Warp, and it's not just IBM. It's a whole community. And, you know, I don't really even care if everybody uses it. I honestly don't care. I don't care if it beats Microsoft on the desktop market. I honestly, that is not something that I even care about. what I do care about is showing that idea is taking precedence and or on its way, because that would be so much nicer if lots of things were done like that. Of course, there's going to be capitalism, stuff like that, and I actually have no issues with capitalism. I have no issues with selling your product. I have no issues with trying to be competitive, but I do have issues with trying to totally knock somebody off the market.
Yeah, but what's really interesting is even in our own history, they can date when, archaeologically, they can date when a group of people lived in a certain place just by the tools that they used. And they can see, actually, if they stayed there for a long enough period of time, they can watch the tools change. And then what's really neat is when someone moves from one place and has a different tool and goes somewhere else, and it seems to be a better tool, then all the other tools, well, the past tools, die away. They no longer make them because they're not as useful. But we live in a time where we can have all the tools in the world available to us at pretty much any time from throughout history. So we live in a time which is amazing amount of choice, and the availability of doing whatever we want to do is pretty much a possibility.
Yeah, totally. I mean, even like some of the poorest people actually live in better conditions than kings used to live in. I mean, you know, we've got running water and sewers and electricity and Circle K's, you know. I mean, that's not a major accomplishment, a Circle K, but I'm saying, where did you have stuff like that, you know, in the Middle Ages? You know, you didn't have a Circle K. You didn't even have food like that, you know, which I guess it's a bad. Let's just say grocery store, because that's much better than the Circle K. Being able to have all that food available to you, it's just so many more accomplishments and so many more benefits now. And the choice is good. And things are getting, I think people are building products smarter as far as environment-wise, as far as efficiency and use, and it's good that that's in, you know. It's cool, it's in to be smart and efficient and come out with better products and stuff like that. So that's, you know, that's only going to benefit all of us as consumers.
Because money is the symbol for surplus value, and the only way to accumulate any surplus value is to innovate and create new things.
You know, and honestly, nowadays, if you really look at it, there's so many ways to get things extremely cheap. compared to what things were used to be. I mean, like nowadays, if you get an older car, okay, depending on the car you get, it could be pretty cheap to get an older car, a used car. It could be pretty cheap to maintain that car and actually get quite a few miles out of it before it's, you know, unmaintainable or it's too expensive to maintain. You can get a computer cheap that does everything you want. So many things. Access to unlimited information. You know, the internet. You know, $20 a month or less. You know, $9 a month. It depends on your connection speed.
I do want to plug Access for Free on this one. Because they are great. You know, and I use them. I've been dropped twice in the last year that I've used them.
It's a dial-up, right?
Yeah, it's just dial-up. And, like, using any other portal, you know, like service providers, I used to be dropped at least twice a day. These people have only dropped me twice in the last year, which is pretty amazing. And they're free.
Wow.
For up to less than 10 hours a month if you use them. It's free. If you use them for more than 10 hours, it's $1 per hour up into $9.95 is the total amount.
Huh. Not bad. The, you know, that it's cool to get stuff that's free. Okay. We talked about, you know, because Linux is free and we talked about that. But I don't have a problem paying for stuff, too. You know? No problem paying for stuff at all. Yeah, I just from seeing the activity since that DCOM exploit came out, and this is just like the low-end code. I mean, it's just enough, you know, it gets the job done, but it's not, people are now making scanners out of it to scan ranges of IPs and all sorts of stuff. People are just using it like it's a fiesta party, and people, you really, really need to go through and find out how to secure your machine through all means possible. I really recommend throwing a firewall up. I really recommend doing every bit of patching you could possibly do. Turn off or remove things you don't run or need. It's only to your benefit. I mean, you may think there's nothing on your machine, and you know, you're worried about, or you're not worried about anybody getting anything, and you're just too lazy to do it. You know, I just don't want anybody using my stuff. Even if I didn't, you know, even if there's nothing on my machine. You know, I didn't invite you to use it, and I don't want you to use it. So I think you should have that feeling yourself. And also on top of it, somebody could be using your machine to be attacking somebody else's machine.
Which is even worse, because that means that you're just enabling them to do so.
Yeah.
When you can easily fix it.
Oh, you know, just to mention, there was this person, too, that said said that. And he said, oh, I got 4 XP boxes today with the DCOM exploit. And he said, I don't know what to do with them, though. And he said, maybe I should just start formatting their hard drives.
Oh.
And I said, I told the guy, I said, why would you want to do that? I said, you're such a loser. And I just left it at that, because I've just seen so much of that. I mean, you know.
That's just malicious. Of, like, you was bored, you found out this exploit.
It takes no skill to do it. I mean, it took no skill to run the exploit, okay? It takes no skill to remove all the contents of your hard drive. Yeah, there's people like that out there, you know? So I hope you're aware of that. I hope you're aware that those things exist. And
well, and those are some of the same kind of security issues that deal with when you have a free information society. Which is also really neat at the same time, because you have to protect yourself. You can't rely on anybody else to really protect you, because there's so much, like, danger or so many insecurities out there.
Definitely.
And that's the same thing that parallels in our everyday lives, is we want the government and the police force and all that to protect us and keep us secure against all these, you know, infamous, enigmatic threats that are out there. But no, the only person that can really, really protect you is you. Being aware of your environment, being aware of the surroundings, and the stimulus that are there. Same thing in cyberspace, of, you know, knowing, at least being prepared for anything that can happen.
Definitely. The, you know, one thing too, talking about being prepared and stuff, one thing I was just thinking about, I did read an article about since the RIAA is attacking file swappers, they did come out with other versions of Kazaa, Kazaa, to try to help thwart tracking of the government and people interested in prosecuting file swappers.
Joy.
So I haven't installed that program actually. I'm not too into the file swapping. I'm not saying I totally disagree with it, but I'll tell you what I do disagree with. I do disagree with people that are instant, you know, that are just super leechers, you know, that just everything they've got, they just sucked off the internet. I think that's there's something wrong with that.
But yeah, that's just overconsumption of it.
So
Blatant misuse. Except that, you know, it does, if that's the thing is, now if they're, what they do, you know, is if they download all these songs, or all this information, let's just say information. But then the nice thing about that is they usually have to allow everybody else access to it. Which, that gives everybody even more choice.
Certainly, the choice is there. I do think that, you know, there is a level of compensation obviously owed to the creator. You know,
oh, yeah.
And that could be debated because when you talk, well, to some degree, because you're talking about a lot of that money doesn't even get back to the songwriter. So, you know, that's a whole issue. So it's really complex as far as going in and really pulling out like the ethical values. I think file swapping is okay. You know, I've got a few files myself. I've used them, but I didn't go overboard. And I've seen people that are just completely overboard, and that right there tells me now that it's abuse of what's been going on, and it's that's when you've gone too far, is when you've got a whole bunch out there. But I don't know. I'm not going to prosecute it, and I'm not going to come to your house, so doesn't really matter what I say. All right. Well, it's getting closer to the end. I'm glad you guys have been hanging through the whole show with us. You know, VR's dealing with a cold, and I'm trying to talk about a lot of information here. A few of us are going to be going to DEF CON this year, which will be happening next week. The next show will be talking about some of the events at DEF CON. There's actually so much there, so it's hard to comment on everything, but we're going to do our best. But if you don't know what it is, I assume that everyone knew for a second, but maybe you don't know. Go to defcon.org, and basically it's a conference for hackers. And there's going to be a lot of activities there. There's going to be a lot of speakers there. There's going to be a network there. You're going to be able to do capture the flag, trying to gain access to other people's boxes legally. It's all set up to be that way. There is the Wi-Fi shootout. There's the war driving contest. There is the, I don't know if they, last year they did the, well, they've been doing it for a few years. They did the DEF CON parachuting. They go and parachute just for fun, and
oh, right.
Yeah, they have a shootout too. In the mornings, they go down and have a shootout down in the desert, just target shooting, and you'll find a lot of feds come out there and bring their guns too. So
that sounds like a good time had by all.
Yeah, make buddies with the feds, and then you'll always see good presentations from the speakers, general fun and madness. All sorts of craziness going on, alternative ideas, views, and...
And that's in Vegas, right?
Vegas.
Yeah, because in, like, September, there's Burning Man, too.
Oh, yeah. Burning Man, you have to... They made a change, didn't they? They made some sort of change to... You have to pay now because...
Yeah, you have to get entry fees and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's just getting too many people, even with their, leave only footprints and take only pictures kind of ethics. You know, you still have, like, thousands of people. It's really hard on the environment.
Yeah.
Which I really want to go to that again. So, if anybody wants, you know, check that out on burningman.com as well.
Sweet. Yeah, it's definitely neat. I've never been there. I really want to go. Maybe I'll go this year. And let's see. I think I'm going to end on that.
Right on.
Sounds good to me. All right. Well, we will be back in 2 weeks.
Yay.
VR will probably not be sick.
Hopefully not. That would really suck.
And definitely bring you a report of DEF CON.
Except I'm really enjoying my voice today.
we'll bring you a report of DEF CON. And I have a buddy that hopefully I'll get him on one of these shows. and we'll talk a lot about Wi-Fi and war driving and everything in that realm. So stay tuned, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. This is Slip Mode signing out.
This is VR saying plug in and tune out.
All right, we'll see you then.
Must be some kind of way out of here. Say that joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief. Businessman there, to drink my wine. Come and dig my earth. None will ever own a mine. Nobody up in this world. No reason to get excited. The thing becomes